have a recommendation for someone wanting to sort of dabble in French fantasy? Is there anything that
A series that actually I tried to acquire but wasn't able to, by Christelle Dabo, which actually is very, I think one of her main influences, Miyazaki. I'm trying to remember, let me just Google what the English translation of the series was. I think it's the Mirror Walker series. I think all four volumes of this series have been published in English now. And the first one is called A Winter's Promise. Yes, A Winter's Promise. The Mirror Visitor, that's what it's called. The Mirror Visitor series. And they are YA, a sort of steampunk YA, very influenced by Miyazaki, set in a kind of, to begin with anyway, a kind of steampunky Versailles fantasy world full of backstabbing and plotting and intrigue, and it's sort of seductive but at the same time very cruel and quite a scary place. I absolutely loved it. I really recommend those. I think that's a great example of the kind of originality that French fantasy writing can offer.
Yes, and going back to the Dutch experience, you very recently sent me, is it The King of the Copper Mountain?
Oh yes, Yeah,
which is an obviously a classic work, but that's something I have found myself recommending to particularly parents with children who are just learning to get secure in reading, because it has an element of repetition. But also what's really interesting about that is the good-heartedness of it. It's definitely something where you feel, oh, this is a really lovely, kind world. You've got sort of wonderfully absurd things happening, like a series of bees turning up and telling a story, and a dragon who gets hacked in the stables. So, but it's not, it doesn't follow, because it's a series of stories, it doesn't sort of follow a conventional pattern. You're always surprised by it.
Yes. Yeah, so I think that's what's interesting about it and what makes it so, one of the reasons why it's been so popular, because it's just so perfect for reading aloud, I think, with children, which I think is so important. I think, well, that's why I fell in love with reading in the first place, is being read to aloud and not just picture books. My mum and I would read novels together, and this is a novel for, I'd say, 7+ children, but one that you could just have great fun reading aloud at bedtime, and it's split into these little chapters, self-contained. And as you say, it's so gentle and warm, and there's just this feeling of goodness about it that is really appealing.
Mm, absolutely. And a wonderful role model for an older king. I actually made a list of top 10 fantasy royalty over the Queen's Jubilee weekend. And that came in on my list because I thought that's a really nice version of a king. Someone who everybody's welcome. We'll fit you in somewhere in the house. So if you were going to look back at remember yourself as a child, what were your go-to books, perhaps fantasy books maybe, that inspired you on the path? You mentioned that you read together with your parents, but what's your favourites from back then?
Well, so many, really. I really enjoy thinking about those times because I just loved, I just fell in love with reading quite early on, and there were so many amazing books for me to discover. I think probably one of the first books that I read, and probably the first fantasy book that I read was, fittingly, was The Hobbit by Tolkien, which, just kind of blew me away. And, I was like running around the playground at school trying to get people to play at being like elves and dwarves and hobbits with me, and became obsessed and read The Lord of the Rings. And then I think that just gave me a taste for all things magical. And I read so many classics, really, that I just loved, by authors like Diana Wynne Jones and Penelope Lively, The Ghost of Thomas Kemp, also an Oxfordshire-based book, I think. Alan Garner, The Weird Stone of Brisingamen and the sequels. And then I really got into... Brian Jack's The Red Wall books.
Those are animal fables, aren't they, for those who may not have come across them?
Yeah, they're kind of like Sylvanian Families meets Braveheart, kind of about this all set around Redwall Abbey, which is like an abbey in the middle of a sort of bucolic landscape populated by these lovely woodland animals like mice and moles and rabbits, and they're invariably besieged by an army of rats and foxes and all the scary woodland animals, basically. And it would culminate in a big battle, and I just couldn't get enough of them. I must have read, I don't know, but I'd read them many, many times. And then another author that I think I moved on to, because he also had the had mice as the stars of his stories, was Robin Jarvis. I don't know if you're familiar with his Deptford Mice books, and also the Whitby Witches. Yeah. I absolutely love those. They're very different from Redwall in the sense that they are much more magical, much darker and scarier. I mean, I think you could call them horror, really. There are some really frightening moments, some really tragic moments too. A real sense of magic and otherworldliness about them that I can sort of still feel now when I think about them. And that's something that the scariness and the darkness that I found in those books is something that I think is quite rare, actually, to find in children's books. Something that I loved and something that I think perhaps there should be more of. We're publishing a Finnish children's novel this autumn. It's called History of Raspberry Hill. And it's a gothic mystery set in a sanatorium in a snowy Finnish forest in the 1920s, and it's about a young 12-year-old girl who gets sent there to recover from tuberculosis, but she soon discovers that, you know, there are some mysterious goings on at this sanatorium, and she tries to get to the bottom of them, but I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it doesn't all go well, and it turns out to be quite a dangerous and scary place. And I heard the author of that, Eva France, she talks quite eloquently about how it's important to write scary stories for children, because when a child is reading a story, they're in control of what they're imagining and what they're picturing in their mind's eye, and they can sort of make it as scary or as or tone it down as much as they want, or they can stop when they want and go on when they feel ready. It's not like when you're being assaulted by images from a TV screen, for example. And I agree with her. I think scary children's books, there should be more of them. And then on my journey, I suppose, I could sit here forever listing all of the children's books that I loved. But when I was 11, I think it was when Northern Lights came out by Philip Pullman. And that just blew my mind as well. Like, I never read anything like that before. I remember taking it on holiday. And it was just incredible. I think it had all of the magic and adventure that I was used to and sort of addicted to by that time, but it also just had all this such depth and all these new ideas and references that led me down new paths. And also this, I loved something that really sort of sparked my imagination was this, this idea of alternate worlds, the idea that, things could be different. If only for just some small changes here and there, we could be living in a completely different world. And that's once you realize that, it sort of opens the door to thinking about so many more fascinating things.
It is interesting that the modern, they've been around since early in the 20th century, but the sort of multiverse concepts have always existed in fantasy, with the Underhill, the world of the Fae, and the traveling between worlds has happened. We obviously, traditionally, we all knew something, didn't we? Because it's always been there in story. It just took the physicist a while to figure it out.
It makes me think of another great classic that I loved when I was a kid, The Wolves of Willoughby Chase by Joan Aiken, which I didn't even realise at the time was like an alternate history, but it it is, isn't it? It's like it's an England where the Glorious Revolution never happened. So it's like a Catholic England, which I think went over my head, to be fair, when I first read it. But yeah, it's interesting.
Joan Aitken is I remember reading, she had one of the things that she does is really great titles for her books. Yeah. And I think she perhaps has been a little bit forgotten. Mm-hmm. I remember there was a collection of stories of her called The Necklace of Raindrops, which I kept borrowing again and again from the library because I just loved the title more than anything else about it. And again, with illustrations, I've got several of hers on my classic children's bookshelf in the other room. So what about now? And you don't have to confine yourself to children's books. What's your top read of the last decade, would you say?
Ooh, a fantasy novel. I find it quite hard to... I mean, I read... what was Susanna Clarke's new book called?
Piranesi
last year, which I loved. I thought that was just almost impossibly mysterious and intriguing and like really paid off in the end. And I guess that reminded me, this is probably more than a decade ago now, that Jonathan Clarke, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, yeah, that's the one, came out. I thought that was really striking, just the sense of weirdness and otherness and like menace that she gave her magical environments is really distinctive and like really stayed with me.
I think both her and Margaret Atwood show how you can do fantasy within a literary fiction tradition. Because yes. Quite often fantasy gets hived off into genre fiction.
Yes.
And people who sort of self-select, they don't go and bother to look what's on the shelf if they don't like, you know, dwarves and elves and things. But both of those writers have found a route which is respectable as far as the literary establishment is concerned. It's quite fascinating, really, the politics of that.
Yes.
So tell us about the Pushkin Press. You don't sound like a publisher who invites submissions. You go out and find things in translation that have already been published. Is that how it works for you?
Well, no. For a start, we don't only publish books in translation. So we do publish English language original stuff as well. In terms of how we get our submissions, I mean, sometimes they're submitted to us by agents. A lot of the time they come from translators who do a really valuable job in, you know, not just in translating books, but in finding them and championing them. And in, you know, often, you know, they're the ones who have the first idea that you know, this book deserves to be read in English. And then there's a good amount of just kind of rummaging around and finding things, which is very enjoyable.
And before your colleague gets deluged with unsolicited submissions, anyone listening to this who has a manuscript, do go and read what they want on the Pushkin Press website rather than just send it in, because, you know, it can be a bit of a nightmare for the editors if things come at them from all over.
Yes.
So, Daniel, I don't want to get your colleague in trouble. But, Daniel, when we finish our podcast, we always have a section where we have a little think about where in all the fantasy worlds that we've met, be it in books or on film or wherever, would it be the best for something? And we've done all sorts of different subjects, from where's the best place to get a magical sword or best place to go down the pub. But with you, I thought, where's the best place to be a publisher? Now, I think we probably have to expand the definition to include bookseller or book creator, otherwise we might be very limited on our choices. But have you had a chance to think where you would like to sell books, in which fantasy world?
I was trying to think about, I was trying to think of kind of literary locations in fantasy worlds. It was quite fun. Something that really that came to my mind was Terry Pratchett, Ankh-Morpork, and the library, actually, the Unseen University, that has that amazing orangutan librarian and is full of all sorts of magical grimoires, etc. So that came to my mind. And also, if you don't mind me plugging another one of our books that's coming up this autumn, there's a wonderful German fantasy title called Bramble Fox by an author called Catherine Tordassi. We're publishing it this autumn, and it's, even though the author is German, it's set in Britain, in Wales, and it's really informed by British mythology and actually a lot of the classics that I've already mentioned. She has a real love for those too, so it's really interesting to see those reflected back by a German author. It's brilliant. I think people will really love it. But one of the protagonists of that book is called Ben, and he's a young Welsh boy who works in a bookshop with his mum. And so what I really like about the story is that he's having this amazing magical adventure. He goes through into the fairy world, encounters all sorts of peril, and he's experiencing it and viewing it through the lens of, Tolkien and all these other classics that we've been talking about. So he's kind of seeing this story through the prism of these books that we already love, which I think is really interesting. And anyway, in this fantasy world, he finds an amazing, a library, a place called World's End, which is a kind of like a skyscraper driven down into the earth, just full of endless new books for him to read, which is like his idea of heaven. I thought that was such a lovely idea. I really enjoyed it. As for where it would be good to be a publisher or bookseller,
yeah,
well, that's a bit tricky.
I think for me, I would really like to. It's probably a lot of our listeners are shouting this out at us. I'd quite like to be in Diagon Alley and have a bookshop down there, one that doesn't get blasted by Death Eaters. But yeah, that sounds quite fun.
That's a great answer.
But that's where I would pick. Well, thank you so much, Daniel, for talking to us and giving us a publisher's perspective, and particularly bringing to our attention the books that we may not be aware of because of an English language bias that happens. And we'll put a link to the press in the show notes. People can go and check out what the Pushkin Press gets up to. So thank you very much for joining us, and look forward to reading more of your books, hopefully, for review.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been great fun.
Thanks for listening to Mythmakers Podcast, brought to you by the Oxford Centre for Fantasy. Visit oxfordcentreforfantasy.org to join in the fun. Find out about our online courses, in-person stays in Oxford, plus visit our shop for great gifts. Tell a friend and subscribe wherever you find your favourite podcasts worldwide.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.